Radio Prague News.
The Minister for Regional Development, Věra Jourová, has been nominated by the ruling coalition for the post of Czech EU Commissioner. The ANO party of the ruling coalition is to debate who should replace her in the post of Minister for Regional Development. And the State Attorney's Office in Olomouc has filed charges of tax evasion against a dozen people in the region. The ANO movement's Minister for Regional Development, Věra Jourová, has been nominated by the ruling coalition for the post of Czech EU Commissioner. The coalition, led by the Social Democrats, made the announcement on Monday. Mrs. Jourová's nomination received a boost last week after it became apparent that a female nominee to the new commission, headed by the new head Jean-Claude Juncker, was preferred. For weeks, parties in the coalition had pushed their own candidates, with the Social Democrats, for example, originally getting behind former finance minister Pavel Medlík. According to inside sources close to the government, the Social Democrats traded their support for Věra Jourová's nomination to the post of EU commissioner for a higher minimal wage growth and more money for the social services sphere in 2015. The ANO party, which holds the finance ministry portfolio, has nodded to both. The Social Democrats want a minimal wage hike by 700 crowns a month as opposed to the proposed 500 crown increase, and want to pump 750 million crowns more into the sphere of social services. Meanwhile, the ANO party of the ruling coalition is to debate who should replace Věra Jourová in the post of Regional Development Minister following her nomination to be the country's next EU commissioner. According to party leader Andrej Babiš, one of the candidates being considered is Deputy Regional Affairs Minister Klára Dostálová, who is in charge of the EU Operation Programmes agenda. The Czech Republic has in the past had problems with drawing of EU funds, and the question who should replace Ms. Jourová, who is an expert in the field, is seen as being of utmost importance. The State Attorney's Office in Olomouc has filed charges of tax evasion against a dozen people in the region. According to Olomouc State Attorney Karel Studený, the case involves a number of companies and two lawyers who masterminded the tax scams. The damage is said to have reached tens of millions of crowns. The Czech government recently set up a special team made up of experts from different fields to crack down on large-scale tax evasion, which is costing the country billions of crowns in lost revenues. Several hundred people on Monday attended the funeral of Sergeant Ivo Klusák, one of the five Czech servicemen who died in a suicide bombing in Afghanistan. The 34-year-old soldier was given a funeral with military honours, attended by Defence Minister Martin Stropnický, Army Chief of Staff Petr Pavel, and members of the Chrudim Special Forces. He was awarded a medal for bravery in memoriam. Sergeant Klusák served in six foreign missions, four of those in Afghanistan. And finally, meteorologists have issued a storm warning for the southwestern parts of the country, where heavy rain on Monday night and Tuesday morning may swell smaller rivers. Day temperatures should not drop below 22 degrees Celsius, but the southern parts of the country may be hit by heavy storms with hailstones and high wind. The week is expected to be hot and humid with plenty of rain and temperatures gradually rising back to the 30s. I'm Daniela Lazarová, and that's the end of the news.
This is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Jan Bellinger. Coming up in today's program, the ruling coalition has agreed on Věra Jourová to become the Czech Republic's next European commissioner. And we'll have all the very latest from the world of sports. And that'll be followed by today's one-on-one. If you're interested in architecture, be sure to stay tuned for that. The Czech coalition parties have nominated Regional Development Minister Věra Jourová as the country's candidate for the European Commission. The Czech government hopes she could take over one of the economic portfolios in the Commission. Ms. Jourová of the ANO party, meanwhile, has vowed to raise the EU's prestige with Czechs. Jan Richter has the details.
It took the Czech coalition an inordinately long time to agree on a candidate for the post of European Commissioner. For about 2 months, each of the three coalition parties, the Social Democrats, ANO, and the Christian Democrats, stood relentlessly behind their own nominees, including a former European Commissioner under Romano Prodi a former Czech finance minister and a member of the European Parliament. But on Monday, coalition leaders announced that the Czech Republic would nominate Regional Development Minister Věra Jourová for the post. Czech Prime Minister and Social Democrat leader Bohuslav Sobotka told reporters the main reason was that as a woman, Ms. Jourová will have a bigger chance to land one of the more influential portfolios.
My consultations with the next president of the European Commission, Jean-Claude Juncker, in Brussels last week indicated that the Czech Republic would have a better negotiating position for a strong portfolio if we nominate a woman. It was made clear that the new European Commission might have problems winning support from the European Parliament if it had fewer women in its ranks than the outgoing one, that is, fewer than 9. So countries that nominate women will have a bigger chance of getting more important portfolios.
The Czech government would like to see Ms. Jourová taking over the regional policy, transport or industry portfolios, or possibly the post of the Commission's vice president in charge of interinstitutional relations and administration. Věra Jourová, who is 49, has served as the Minister for Regional Development since the current Czech centre-left government was formed in January. Last year, she joined the ANO party, set up by the Slovak-born multi-billionaire and the current finance minister Andrej Babiš, and was elected ANO's deputy chairwoman. Between 2004 and 2006, she held the post of Deputy Regional Development Minister under Social Democrat Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek. But her term at the ministry ended in corruption charges. She spent a month in police detention before the case against her was dismissed. On Monday, Věra Jourová told reporters she would like to run her portfolio as a professional with high moral standards to improve the EU's reputation among Czechs and to get all Czech representatives in the EU to promote their country's interests.
The European Commissioner must, of course, be impartial without regard to national interests. But beyond this, I would like to focus on coordinating the activities of Czech people in EU institutions to promote Czech national interests after my working hours, if you will.
Věra Jourová's nomination is now to be discussed by the European Affairs Committee of the Lower House before being formally approved by the government later this week.
My colleague Jan Richter reporting there on the nomination of Věra Jourová as the Czech candidate for European Commissioner. If you'd like to comment, write to english@radio.cz. Now, though, it's time for sports, and for that I'm joined by Ian Willoughby.
We begin today with cycling and the Tour de France, where the Czech rider Leopold Koenig has been winning admirers. The NetApp Endura team leader is eighth overall in the world's most famous cycling race, with only 6 stages to go. Koenig has been particularly successful in the Tour's Alpine stages, coming third in Chamrousse and ninth in Risoul. As he pointed out before Monday's rest day, only overall leader Vincenzo Nibali of Italy outdid him in the Alps.
If it was the Tour de Alpes and not Tour de France, I'd actually be second or third, which would be pretty good. I was comfortable in the Alps and only Nibali was ahead of me overall. So I will go into the Pyrenees with greater confidence. I'm looking forward to them.
Leopold Koenig's Germany-based NetApp team only got into the Tour de France as a wild card entry. And many believe it won't be long before the Czech cyclist, who also won a stage and came ninth in the Vuelta's Grand Tour last year, is snapped up by a more prestigious stable. Among them is former Czech national champion Petr Benčík.
A great performance, just like in Vuelta. Before the Tour de France, I tipped Koenig to come eighth, and I still believe that he will do so, even though he hit a few holes at the start. His performance has been absolutely super, and I think he's definitely staked a claim for a place in one of the top teams.
Athletics Now and Czech javelin star Barbara Špatáková has continued her perfect comeback after maternity leave. The Olympic champion topped the podium at a Diamond League meeting in Monaco on Friday. That's her third triumph in the competition in a row. Meanwhile, world champion Susanna Hainová came eighth in the 400 metres hurdles in Monaco on her return from injury. Football and Sparta Prague have left several key players at home, ahead of the second leg of their Champions League second qualifying round tie with Levadia Tallinn on Tuesday. The Czech title holders can afford to do so after a 7-0 demolition of the Estonians in Prague last week, in which captain David Lafata found the net five times. Sparta are set to meet either Malmo of Sweden or Latvian outfit Ventspils in the next round. Finally, in the Czech Soccer League, Baník Ostrava's home games look like being relatively quiet next season. The club rejected a call from hardcore supporters to reduce the amount of data that spectators have to provide for fan registration cards. So, in turn, the ultras have decided to stay away from Ostrava's Bazali Stadium. That's all the sport for today.
Ian will be with those results, and Ian stays with us now for this edition of One on One. If you're into popular sites and hidden gems, architecturally speaking, well, have a listen.
The Prague Vitruvius is an extremely useful website for anyone interested in perhaps the Czech capital's greatest asset, its unparalleled wealth of architecture. The blog is the work of Englishman Alex Wendt, who has created close to 300 entries, taking in both tourist sites and largely unknown gems way out in the suburbs. When we spoke at the Vinohrady Pavilion, designed by one of his favourite Prague architects, I asked Alex what had brought him to the city in the first place.
People always say when they come to Prague that it was either the beer, the women, or the architecture. And I guess for me it was the architecture, and still is. Very much it's a wonderful place to live, so different from anywhere else that I've ever visited.
You told me that prior to the Prague Vitruvius you had a photo blog of Vršovice. What attracted you to the whole area of documenting Prague and Prague's architecture?
Well, I was lucky enough, I suppose, just at about the right time to get in with a small property in Vršovice. And the fact that I was next to the stunning Grebovka Villa and able to walk to work through the streets of Vinohrady made that an obvious place to start to look at. And I guess over the years I've got to know a few people who live around there, and the idea of cataloguing some sort of local life was an attractive one.
And what led then to the subsequent Prague Vitruvius?
Well, it was more than anything the chance to get out and broaden my horizons by literally walking around Prague, becoming a kind of flaneur of Prague. I think I ran out of space, really, in Vršovice, and I wanted just to spread my wings a bit.
And have you got a background in architecture or history?
Not in the least. It's been really a hobby of mine for many, many years. I've always been a kind of art historian, monke, and this was a really great opportunity, given the ease with which you can put websites together now, to put down some good photos and to engage in my real passion, which is research and local history.
What does the name Prague Vitruvius mean, or where does it come from?
Well, Vitruvius himself was a Roman general in the first century, but he was also significantly the author of one of the first ever guides to architecture, De Architectura, and this book was translated over the subsequent centuries, coming to Britain finally in the 18th century, and it was the reason why all stately homes, for example, built in Britain in the 18th century look like neoclassical temples. Now, of course, Prague has a much wider range of architectural styles than simply the Vitruvian classical style, but I thought it would be a useful title for this blog to go under.
With some of the entries you have mainly just photos, great photos of the buildings. Other times you have text on the background, the dates, the architects. How do you do the research?
Well, most of this stuff, amazingly now, is available on the web. So luckily I'm not having to go to the Narodni knihovna and work my way through volumes of Czech history. There's also some really fantastic local architectural historians. Zdeněk Lukáš has actually been in touch privately. For example, when I've run out of printed materials, I usually manage to find someone who can help.
Lukáš being the Prague Castle architect and one of the country's best-known architecture critics.
Indeed, and in particular, he was helpful on tracking down architects of Art Nouveau buildings in Vinohrady, which I think is his stamping ground.
Are there some buildings about which you simply can't find out anything?
One or two, but of course I always leave a note on the blog asking for input, and although I don't get a great deal of that, I'm hoping that perhaps this radio interview will spur a little bit more interaction.
Tell us, Alex, about where we are now at the Vinohradsky Pavilion, the Vinohrady Pavilion. Why did you want to meet here?
Well, to me, this represents really the most interesting local architect, the local Vinohrady architect, Antonín Turek, who was operating around the end of the 19th century and the beginning of the 20th century. And actually, if you draw a line from Náměstí Míru along Koruny, you can see three of his great buildings in succession. He was responsible for the beautiful Vinohradská Vodárna, the water tower, near Jičehos Podjebrad. He was responsible for this building, the old Vinohrady Market Hall, recently refurbished again, and also for the Narodný dům, the Vinohrady National House, which is in Náměstí Míru. So these three buildings together form a kind of catalogue of Turek's work.
What is it about him that interests you?
Well, I suppose it's what interests me as well, which is that I love most of all the Baroque style, and this is kind of neo-Baroque. This is kind of early 20th century experimentation in the dying days, really, before the advent of Cubism and the advent of functionalism, of course, which a lot of people associate with the later stages of Czech history.
On your site, people can search according to many different categories, including style, and I counted 14 styles, from the Romanesque to the modern. Which of those styles do you think Prague is particularly strong in?
Well, I think one of the things that attracts most tourists when they come here are the beautifully painted facades and some of the work of the Art Nouveau period. I mean, it's so extensive, is really quite fantastic. I'm a particular fan of Mikuláš Aleš as just one of those great portrayers of Prague history in the form of friezes and historical paintings on the sides of buildings. So I think that's a particular interest of mine. Yeah.
Where can his work be seen?
Well, the Old Town Square has some reconstructed painting of his. A lot of the buildings there were damaged badly at the end of the Second World War, but they've been recently repainted. He's particularly good at portraying the national saint Wenceslaus riding, as it were, out of the building towards you on a horse. And there are similar paintings by him, I think, in all areas of Prague. Prague 7, I'm thinking of as well, near the Veletržní Palác. There are some fantastic Aleš's along that street with the National Gallery. Other paintings of his can be seen, well, pretty much everywhere you turn.
This may be slightly a side issue, but you were telling me you first came here in the early 1990s, and in those days, many of the buildings here were in terrible disrepair. How well do you think the Prague authorities have been doing in terms of maintaining their great historical wealth of buildings?
It's a really difficult match to make, but I think that clearly one never wants to see Prague as just a museum. And indeed, there's a great deal of urban regeneration, as you know, going on at the moment, and one of the constant questions being asked is how much of the past to preserve. But I think that the situation at the end of the 80s was really very grave in terms of not just the look of the buildings, but also the degree to which they were actually falling down. So if in rebuilding they were able to be recomposed with a nod at least to the original colour schemes, the original paintings, then all the better in my opinion.
Getting back to the Prague Vitruvius, are there any particular areas of the city or architectural styles that get a lot of feedback or a lot of interest from readers?
Well, I think the most interest has been in what one might think of as the touristic areas, so that's where most of the comments would come from. But also, interestingly, the most popular photographs on the website have been those just outside Prague. In fact, the Villa Tugendhat in Brno, you might think of as not being part of Prague architecture at all, and in many ways it isn't, but it is. I have covered that as well, and there's been a lot of interest in that. And also, interestingly, in the Dietzenhofer designs for Invalidovna, just outside the city centre.
Does your site get a lot of traffic, a lot of visitors?
Well, it's an interesting point because I tend to take most of my photographs in the summertime. That's when the site is at its most active in terms of new material. But I've noticed recently that even when it's not the summer and I perhaps don't update for several weeks or even months, it's still getting around about 200 to 300 hits a day. So clearly it's been well indexed thanks to Google and other search engines. And I've also had a rather nice boost from the Pražská informační služba, who mentioned me on their page. So, yeah, it's getting quite a lot of interest at the moment.
Do you know who your users are? Are they people based here, people visiting here?
I think largely from the Czech Republic. There are also quite a number of hits from the US and UK.
It strikes me also that a lot of foreigners, having lived here now for a longer period, are expressing more interest in their surroundings and in their districts of the city.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I've certainly found all kinds of people engaging in conversation about architecture, from locals to expats. It does seem to be an area of common ground in which people are interested.
Do you feel perhaps that there's a more valuable role in covering buildings outside the city centre, away from the tourist areas, that are more obscure and that maybe haven't been written about in English?
Yes, I do. I mean, my day job is working as head of communications at Prague College, and the idea of educating is really part of my background. And my feeling is that I'd really like the site to have a double function, really, partly piquing people's curiosities, but also partly educating them in what else there is to be seen. So to have a guide that covers Prague more generously and more areas and periods of Prague's history more generously is ideal.
The Czechs have an expression, profesionální deformace, professional deformation, that you are influenced by what you do. Do you find, in a negative way often, do you find that you can't walk down the street without looking at every building?
I think people who come here and I show around the city tend to become either fascinated or totally bored with what I have to tell them about the city. But to be able to tell the history of a city through its architecture is a privilege we have in Prague, which very few other places in the world have.
You have already heading for 300 entries on the site. What's the future of the Prague Vitruvius? Can you add a lot more? Do you plan to?
Well, I'd like to add as many buildings as there are buildings, but clearly that would be a lifetime project. I suppose my instinct in starting it was to try to present as full a catalogue as I could, in the manner that perhaps 19th century butterfly collectors or botanists might have done. It has that kind of cabinet of curiosities flavour to it, as well as being a kind of encyclopedia.
You've been listening to One on One. This edition was first broadcast back in January of this year. Ian Willoughby's guest was Alex Wendt. That takes us to the end of today's show. Thanks so much for joining us, and take care.